seasoned folks who have already been let down. I'm so tired of America.
and seasons all but fade away into misty clouds of autumn gray. As I sit here looking at the street, little figures quickly moving feet, I'm just a pebble.
Yo, man, I don't think they heard you. Won't you tell them what your name is?
Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina. Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina. Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina. Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina.
Stillmount. That's swell. Just swell. Punctuality. The pride of princes.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Beautiful.
How's that?
Your beautiful baseball trophy. I love baseball.
Golf. I won it for golf.
I love golf, too.
Swell game. Play much? Golf's my hobby. Insurance, my business. You come highly recommended, Miss Dillmount. Bolt the door, take off your things. Let's have a sample.
had to be you.
I think I made my point. We all know where that boop is. I'll ask Michael. He's most likely aware of it. What do you say? What was that, Mike?
That was that great groove from Twin Peaks, Bob.
Yeah, the end of episode 5. The end of the show the other night. Excellent. Some band called Trouble.
I don't think it ended with that, Bob.
Oh, well, then there was a slower song.
Towards the end,
went up, right? The credits said another song.
Yeah. It ended with Coop standing by the statue. That was a bar scene. This episode, he didn't end with a bar scene like he did in
the
others.
Yeah. Okay. So has everybody are up on Twin Peaks, or is it just Michael? Chad, are you up on that? Are you following it?
No, Bob, I'm not.
Okay. Well, you'll like this anyways. All right, everybody. Right off, and Michael's going to be my backup for this, we had a tremendous portrayal out of the blue, near the beginning of the show at some point, of what we just heard, the Bob's DJing before the verbal starts of Payday or this show. Awesome, awesome music. It was totally... the view of the regular Ionaut listening to Bob, listening to the music. She goes, this young girl goes in total ecstasy and trance listening to some dinky kind of music that I play from the early 60s, you know, like the most bubblegum music. You remember that, Michael?
Bob, yep.
Yes, and the song was called I Love How You Love Me. Maybe I should look for it and play it. So... all of a sudden,
that was a beautifully filmed scene, Bob.
Yeah. And here's what you see, people. The little creepy guy and his stupid girlfriend are in trouble, but they start to drive along in his car, convertible, and he puts the radio on, and it goes to 87.7. 8 and 7 is 15, 15 and 7 is 22. Or 7 times 14 and 8 is 22. Or let's subtract it. 7 from 8 is 1 and plus 7 is 8. All the tiny note numbers are in there. So that's where they go. And you hear this, you know, great. I love, Lynch likes what I like. He likes that kind of teen music of the early 60s. And so you start hearing the song, and a little girl, well, like she's about 17 or 18, she rolls back, stares into the sky with this beatific, stoned, hypnotized look on her face, and she listens to Bob's music. And it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible scene. If you've never seen the ecstasy of someone listening to Payday's music is portrayed so well. I mean, this is what Michael just did that, listening to this, right? Listening to the music we just start off with. You and Nick.
Yep,
you and Nick went into ecstasy. Did you think of that when you watched it?
No, that's what I like about your analysis, Bob. You always bring in that different level.
I see it clearer. I see it so clear.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so you, after hearing me say what I say, you agree. That was a portrayal. David Lynch must love our show. He loves Bob's music. He wanted to portray it, right? The effect on the eye dot.
Yep.
He did it, right, Nick?
No, once you say it, Bob, it's obvious. Once you say it, it's obvious.
That's right. Like, you were just enjoying the music, right? You're lost in the content. You were just enjoying the music and the scene and the photography, right? You didn't extrapolate.
Yep.
Yeah, I do it real fast. Nope. The next fucking scene is incredible. All of a sudden, the Hawaiian guy, you know, Mr. Forget his name, the psychiatrist, who fantasizes in the first two seasons of living in Hawaii. He has all these Hawaiian props in his apartment, and he's got colorful sunglasses. Well, all of a sudden, we see why he was painting those shovels. He turns out to be a DJ at some little nothing made up. Well, it's in his own trailer, his own radio station. What? What?
Absolutely.
He said something. Yeah, he's like...
He's like an
Alex Jones, Bob.
Well, no, he's like Bob Marshall or me. He's fucking me. Okay, look, here's what the clues are. Let's see. We should draw it up. If someone can quickly, if they've excerpted it, you know, on YouTube, look for it and send it to me. Also, I'll have to do it another way and bring in the show itself and find the position, which I've got sort of set up on the other computer, but hopefully we can get this excerpted. So what happens, this guy comes on. He's a maniac. He starts complaining about the global conspiracy, the global world government stuff. But here's what he does. He points out. Now, remember, Bob Marshall always introduced his show by saying, this is the electrified voice of Bob Marshall. Hello, Mr. Mulroney and Mr. Bob Fulford. So he always, Bob Marshall always referred to his voice as electrified. It's the exact words of this guy, this DJ. He says this is the electrified something of himself. The next point is, what's he called? Mr. Amp. Now, you'll notice in recent videos, Roxy's been talking about amplify, the ending of a very important essay by McLuhan in the mid-50s on Finney's Wake, and he takes a section of Finney's Wake and he merges it with his own prose as if he's writing it. Might have been a misprint or not, but the point is he ends by saying, I amplify. This guy calls himself Mr. Amp. Right after we have that term, you'll see it in recent Roxy videos. She likes that line. She's always using it. And then the guy says he's broadcasting from Studio A, which is where we broadcast.
Yeah.
You can't get closer than that, guys. Electrified, global conspiracy, and he's complaining about pollution and all the regular stuff that everybody's complained about for the last 40 years. And he's a nice melange, but he's corny, and he has his dumb shovels for acoustic effects. Awesome presentation of Bob's radio career, right? And my associates.
Yeah.
Is that obvious? Did you recognize that when you watched it?
Yeah, and Bob, you also have the golden shovel for dealing with shit.
Yeah. Then he does his whole shit thing. He sells his shovel, which is like realign, you know. What's Carolyn call it? Taking out the trash, right. Getting rid of the shit. That's right.
Bob, isn't his name Dr. Jacoby?
Yes, yeah.
Is there anything about the name? I can't find any association with the name.
Oh, well, it's the Herbert W. Armstrong office. It's the tribe of Jacob. Jacob is the Jacob's trouble. Nelson Thal always quoted Jacob as the metaphor for Israel, the real Israel. Mm. So it's biblical. And, of course, it's coming out of Hawaii. We're the new Bible. We're coming out of Hawaii. So look at the role of Jacob.
And we're the Jacobites, the Scottish.
Yes, they were.
And that's my heritage.
The Jacobites are the Freemason agent provocateurs in the streets. They call the Jacobin or Jacobites. They're the radicals that you'll see. Roxy's always showing a picture of the guy we saw on the Notre Dame Cathedral. Remember that guy was leaning over the parapet? And he had a Jacobite hat on.
Right, the hat.
Okay. Yeah, and then she sees that in cathedrals all over the place.
Yeah, and she gave us each a Jacobite hat.
That's right. So I forgot that point. That's a good point to make. Yes.
Okay.
Didn't even think of the Israel thing, but as soon as you say it, remind me of Oda's name, I had forgotten it, all these other points. I mean, Nelson used to go on about Jacob's trouble and all that, and Dr. Jacoby. He kept seeing the Herbert W. Armstrong. The British flag, what's it called? The something Jack.
Union Jack.
That's a reference to them knowing they're the real Israel.
Yeah.
So they're the people of Jacob. I mean, Jacob starts the tribes, doesn't he? Isn't his son Joseph and those guys that get in the problem, the brothers and all that? Yeah, I think he has 12 sons. And Joseph is the one who ends up in Egypt, you know, with the many-colored coat. And then the other brothers are all fucked up, and then they come to him, even though they kicked him out way back. So Jacob's trouble. We're witnessing that right now in the real Israel, which is North America, specifically the United States and Britain. And so it's very appropriate to be playing speeches by Webster Tarpley, one of the LaRouche lieutenants who does great stuff, great scholarly stuff on the Venetian conspiracy and where Newton came from, where Galileo came from, up to modern economics and Bertrand Russell. I posted that talk by Webster Tarpley, probably done around 1990, for the LaRouche group when he was still in it. It's never been clear why he left the LaRouche group, but he uses the LaRouche information all the time. And we had some great, you should look at it, Carol. He goes to Harold Channer's scene, and he's been interviewed by, we have little bits that they took after the interview, and Webster is talking to Harold, but he keeps complaining. Harold won't let him finish his sentence.
The trouble we all had
with
Harold.
Yeah, and he really yells at Harold. And then I happen to notice on the commentary on one of these, the dialogue with Webster, or with someone else, on Harold's own network, and everybody's screaming, "Who the fuck are you? Can't you fucking stop interrupting?" They were listening to the WBAI scientist, Kaizo, a famous guy, you know, out of New York, the expert on physics. Forget his name, but they're saying, "We want to hear Mr. Kaizo." Yeah, you just keep interrupting him, and just endless complaints. And, you know, I brought this up with Harold many times. He doesn't care. He's all concerned that he's dominating everybody.
Yeah, he's a god. He totally is a god.
He does it badly. He's a bad god.
His
mic is broken or something. His brain's broken, but Harold doesn't even, like, he asked Webster, like, which economist school are you from? And he names the mainstream guys, and every one of them, Webster says, no. Then he finally says, it's the American system. But Harold doesn't even hear it. He doesn't even know to ask him, what is the American system, you know, which leads into the whole LaRouche ideology. But anyway, excuse me, pretty hilarious. Now, I want to point out something else about this Twin Peaks. You know the way the good Dale Cooper is going around zombified? he can't really function. You know what that is? I figured it out. That is a Ionaut after a session with Ion or listening to us for a year. They become alienated. They don't function socially. And they're like, that's what's going on.
You crash, Russell.
What, Nick?
You're quite right, Bob.
Quite right. He is like...
Not even after a year, like, 4 months.
Yeah, like 1 month. Like you guys. He can't focus on any social niceties. It's not that people piss him off, but he just will piss people off because he doesn't respond properly. And even though it's a long, drawn-out scene, it is funny at certain points, like when he goes to the business meeting and all that stuff. But I realize it is the... non-physical activated, And many Ionauts are actually like that. After they start engaging with Iondom, they're out of it. And they're noticing and thinking new things. And remember, he's been kicked out of where he was, the lodge. Now he's in a new space. He's been altered like Ion does to anybody who has a private session with him. And maybe even during the show. So where it lynches Shoy, what happens to an Ionaut? Pretty incredible.
What I found interesting, Bob, was how slowly he moved and how well that's been portrayed on the show.
Yeah.
And it kind of does reveal that. If you get into Bobdom, you kind of feel that everything slows down and it's sort of the pace of things is a lot clearer and you're kind of like not sure if you want to answer the question or you don't. So I found that quite irritating in the beginning, and then I started to get it that he was like in this, he was really trying to push that point where you kind of really don't need to rush.
He's living in the eternal. He's recognizing there's no time.
Yeah.
He's been given some homework he has to do for his job, some corporate stuff, and he doesn't know what it's for, so he's going to end up standing there by the statue outside the office all night long. He's got nowhere to go. He doesn't need to go anywhere. And he's, like, totally obsessed with the toe and the gaze and the pointing. You know, he's totally involved. He's stoned, ionically. Contemplating no time. So you should check this out, Jed. It's pretty interesting. You could be. Now, look. You had the first couple of episodes, step by step explaining how Ion works. You don't need, you want, but you don't need, and all the different things I've outlined. So what's the next thing to do is to go to the radio world of Iondom, which is what he does in episode 5, right?
Mm. Yes.
Very logical so far, step by step.
Yep.
Now, I'm looking, I've got it drawn up here. What's been happening, and let me just see if I can move it forward. Okay, his kid seems quite alienated now. Is that the same kid, this is Dale Cooper, that was smiling the day before when the wife brought him home?
Yes.
Yeah,
same
it
one.
Is.
Same
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it is. They were having
same
breakfast
kid.
Together.
Mm. Right, he was having a good time. Now he's pissed off. He's sitting in the back car and he looks pissed off, but we don't know why that happened.
Now he looks zoned out, Bob. He looks zoned out. It looks as though he's not quite there. It's like he's kind of taken on his dad's.
That's right.
That whole persona.
He's inhaled the RNA drops his father's giving off.
There you go.
Good.
He's being affected.
Yeah.
He's being affected because it's kind of obvious. He was a happy kid. Now he's pissed off or something's happening to him. He's going through the slowing down of time and the alienation, too. So let's see. Now, I'm just clicking through the show to remind me of the scene. So they're walking into the insurance company. It's called Lucky 7 Insurance. Well, 7's an obsolete number.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a screwed up fucking insurance company. You know, needs to be corrected by Dale Cooper. He'll do something that'll make them millions, right, by accident. Let's see. So it's pretty funny they walk him around and how nobody really notices he's out of it. Really, don't really. It doesn't occur to him what's happening to him.
But wasn't the previous Agent Cooper a government agent? You know, why all of a sudden he's an insurance agent?
Well, no, he's misidentified. They think
he's not in Agent Cooper's life, Carolyn. Yeah, he's in Dougie's life.
Yeah, this is 25 years later.
Ooh. Yeah, Agent Cooper was in the Dark Lodge or whatever it is for 25 years. And then he's kicked into the new dimension by Ion. So he accidentally ended up with another character that Kyle MacLachlan plays named Dougie Jones or something. And Dougie Jones was just with a prostitute, and now he's supposed to go home, but he disintegrates. And the good Dale Cooper shows up, you know, through the ventilator, through the electric plugs of the home, and just is there impaled on the floor. So the prostitute takes him to the casino, and then he wins all his money accidentally, and then he gets taken home to his wife, and then his wife's happy about the money, and then the wife forces him to go to work, but he doesn't know anything. He's a total zombie. He doesn't know where he is, doesn't know anything. And so he walks into his office in this zombified state, which leads to a lot of comedy. Meanwhile, the bad Dale Cooper, so there's three of them. There's Dougie Jones, who was manufactured. He didn't exist, he was told, just before he disappeared.
Yeah, he was created for a purpose. They didn't say what purpose it was, but he was created for a purpose. And now that his purpose is gone, I think it says either the good, one of the Coopers has to die. I think the agent or the bad Cooper, one of them is.
So the Dougie Jones character, somebody's trying to assassinate him. And he keeps not being in the car that they're in the suburb watching. And the name of the suburb is the name of the producers of this series, Rancho something, Rancho Row or something.
Rancho Rosa.
Yeah, Rancho Rosa is the name of the company that's on the flashing electricity at the beginning of the show. And then the suburb is Rancho Rosa. And he's Dougie Jones and Dougie Jones' home, and he keeps being driven out, and the assassins keep misidentifying him so they don't shoot him. But who are those guys that got blown up? They aren't the assassins. They came to take the car, to take Dougie's car. Do you know who they were?
Yeah, they came to steal the car. Mm.
Is that all they were? It's just car thieves?
No, they are.
What?
They may be... I was wondering if one of them was a repossession crew trying to repossess the car, and another was the guys trying to kill him. There seems to be two crews separate from each other.
Yeah, so the guys that get blown up, they are not out to kill Dougie Jones. They just want the car.
No, they looked like they were trying to grab his car.
His car. Mm. Okay, so let me fast forward to remind myself of what other stuff's been going on. And the little kid survives that. He was looking at it. Okay, so then you've got the girl who loved the song. She's in trouble, she's in a bit of trouble. Did you notice? Actually, that song happens well into the show, 34-minute mark. But did you notice the... When she comes in, the late teen girl, to hand over some stuff for the diner, the guy comes out and says her wrong name. Like, she has a different name, and he calls her Becky. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Anyway, the guy in the back who works in the kitchen came out to get the delivery, has a different name. So if I heard that right, there's disorientation there. Let's see, since I'm right here, maybe I could play it and you guys could hear it. It's spinning a bit too much. Anybody find any YouTubes?
What are you looking for YouTubes of in particular, Bob?
The radio, him being the radio guy. I don't know if you can hear that. Try play. I'll play the music. This is the bad teen couple. He's just been fired. He had to fill out a form. The form was what he filled out was ridiculous.
But he's a cokehead, Bob. So he's
a cokehead. Now they're going to drive off. Can you hear it a bit? Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's driving off. She's not sure whether she wants to be with him, so he turns he puts the radio on. So So they're kissing before they start moving. They stop the car a little bit.
Okay, Bob, I'm posting the link for you of the radio show.
Oh, good. They did excerpt it already? Good.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Now I'm going to take my drawing. Hey, I see something. I want
to see. So he gives you some Coke.
Did you take all of that today?
Yeah.
Why?
Why wouldn't I?
He had a job interview. She had to coke up for it. He got some great fucking feedback. He got fired. He's lying to her. He's your average South African teenager. On the make. He's going to end up in the music industry. No, he's claiming he loves her. Put on the radio. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Remember that song, Carol? We danced to it many times.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's our song.
One of the thousand songs.
You could sing this one, Carol.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Beautiful song. You see the look on her face. This is a payday song. I'm the only one in the fucking world who plays Kamasi Washington, Mozart, and then a song like this.
Mm. Yeah, you played this often, Bob.
Recognize it, Carol?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, why is Lynch doing the whole retro romanticizing female? Where's me? Where am I in this?
Look, he knows this music is archetypal. It's way better than Mozart. People don't know it, but he's showing the power of it. He's showing the radio experience for teenagers in the 50s and 60s. He's showing how powerful it is. Powerful music.
And it's still powerful if this is present day.
Yeah. So, let's see. Cooper, he gets in the elevator, and everybody's sitting there looking uncomfortable. McLuhan's discussed why Westerners don't like elevators. And everybody's standing there looking at the numbers and looking for – and Coop is backwards. He's staring at everybody. He's just standing there holding his papers, looking at everybody. They're all looking at him in the elevator. And when the elevator door opens, he doesn't know to move. He doesn't know he's supposed to get out of the elevator. So he causes total chaos in the elevator. He's actually doing stuff that people might have nightmares about. You might have a nightmare of you going to work and doing something like this. Right?
Yeah,
it's the ultimate faux pas.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that we'll get out of the way. And nobody understands what the hell's wrong with him.
Right. So Lynch has taken away all the social niceties of this Cooper and showing how we're all programmed.
What's underneath? The reason why we have social niceties. Mm-hmm. This guy is an eccentric individual. He's following his own drumbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's bring up the stuff that Michael has provided for us. This is the radio show. We assume it's – I didn't even look at it. Now I'll see it.
I haven't listened either, Bob.
Well, it's got Lofi. And where is it? Scroll down. I have to scroll down a bit. It ain't there.
No,
there it is. There it is.
No.
Look, they already announced it. Dr. Amp's Great American Radio Show. Or maybe that's the title. I don't know if it's the title or not of his show. But it's typical of, it's like Sarah's son, Noah. people are broadcasting from their home, you know what I mean, on the internet. So this is the everybody's a broadcaster syndrome. And they have a lot of characters in the area listening to them. They like them, regular listeners. You know, it really is exactly what we have here. He shows like 11 people listening to the DJ.
Yeah, what TV show or movie have you seen recently where somebody has an internet radio show? It's very up to date.
No, but he's not on the internet. He's got a Band-Aid. He's in his trailer. It's an old-fashioned radio show, but he's on his own. So he's showing. Lynch is showing
he
maybe
is on the
internet.
They are picking him up. Watching him on the internet, Bob. If you look in front of him, he's speaking into a camera. The interesting thing
about this
is he's using all the old technology, but he is on the internet. So he's using an old microphone
point.
And old.
Yeah. I forgot that.
He's got all the technology covered.
He's got all the technology covered. He's being video. So let me just bring this into SoundFlower. And volume is up. Click on it.
So that's like Neufeld. You know, Neufeld loves the old technology. And
yes.
He was a DJ. And now you're taking it into the internet.
Yeah, it's
so it's you and Neufeld.
Well, it's a combination of me and Bob Marshall and Neufeld and C. Kellan and today the show with, you know, three people listening. You know, he's got all the factors. Okay, so let's see if this is it.
Really, it's just me, Michael, and Nick.
Yeah. Well, let me just check
that.
Well, there's Chad here. There's an anonymous, but we don't want to find out who that is. They'll never identify themselves.